Wisconsin football is getting closer and the pressure is real. Luke Fickell has to show direction. Jeff Grimes has to show an identity. Colton Joseph has to show he can be QB1. And Sean Eichhorst is now watching it all with fresh eyes. So today we're asking what actually relieves the pressure and what makes it explode. I'm Rajiv. He's Justin. Here we go.
Welcome to the Bucky Report, your destination for all things Wisconsin Badgers. Authentic takes.
Oh my God.
Game analysis.
Touchdown Badgers, ring one up.
And discussion from the fan perspective.
Woohoo!
Thanks for joining us and on Wisconsin.
Welcome into the Bucky Report. We are your hosts, Rajiv and Justin, back together on a Sunday evening to talk about all things Wisconsin Badgers on today's show. We are officially in preview season mode, and today's show has two parts. First up, pressure points. This isn't just about asking who's on the hot seat. We're looking at the biggest pressure spots around Wisconsin football and asking two questions for each one. What would calm things down, and what would send the pressure through the roof? Then in the second half, we're going game by game through the 2026 schedule with our updated confidence ratings, not official predictions yet, but where we stand right now on Wisconsin's chances in every matchup. You can find our show on YouTube and wherever you get your podcast. If you like what we're doing, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. Thank you so much. We're on our push for 3,000 subs before football season. We've got a ton of content coming up. Here's an updated listing of upcoming shows that we've got. We've already knocked a few off of these off the list. We're doing over-under soon. We're doing defensive preview next week with Nick Osen, who's going to be joining us. Offensive previews. We got media days coming up. Know Your Foe series kicks off this Wednesday with Notre Dame. We had a great interview with the guy from Locked On Irish, Tyler Wojak. They are very high on their team. So tons and tons of coverage coming up on the Bucky Report's road to kickoff. So much to do. Happy 4th to everybody. Hope everyone had a great 4th of July. Happy 250 to America. My daughter was running around saying happy birthday to America yesterday, which I thought was pretty cute. Justin, how was your 4th, man? Happy Sunday.
You know what? I actually took it really easy. I was invited to a party. I decided not to go because I went out on the 3rd and went to a tiki bar and watched fireworks at Elkhart Lake for anyone in Wisconsin that knows where that is. And that was an awesome time. But I was kind of like, all right, I'm kind of ready to just chill out and relax today and just take it easy. Not realizing that people in my neighborhood apparently were going to keep shooting fireworks off to like after midnight.
It is one of the things I hate the most about that holiday is the people that do it like literally at midnight. The fireworks were insane. I'm like, okay, guys, like my dog, my poor dog. I can live with it. My daughter was sleeping. It's fine. It's my dog that I feel really bad for because man, she was shaking and I hate it.
See, my dog, the one that's passed on now, for whatever reason, so many other things would make her anxious. She would just chill out and lay down and sleep during fireworks. And I'm like, it is crazy that you are unfazed by this. You're the one dog in existence that doesn't lose your mind when fireworks are going off, but everything else, like, you get tense about.
Yeah. I mean, I wish my dog was like that, but not so much. All right. Let's start before we get into our pressure points, of which the first one is going to be Sean Eichhorst, but let's talk about Sean Eichhorst to begin with. Obviously, new athletic director coming to Wisconsin. Sean Eichhorst used to be at Wisconsin. Of course, not as athletic director. Most recently was at Texas. Most famously or infamously was at Nebraska and fired Bo Pelini, who won 9 games every year, brought in Mike Riley and started the downward spiral that is Nebraska. So, Justin, your initial thoughts on Sean Eichhorst and kind of the whole process of everything that happened with him.
So, I've listened to some of Ryan's stuff and things like that. And my thoughts on this, like this is really tough for me because I look at it and I'm like, you had like the golden seed at Nebraska where it was like, there's when it comes to like having ability and like resources at your disposal, they're kind of like a prime example of a place where your fan base will adore you if you do well. And we'll keep you with resources in order to do your job effectively. But the expectations aren't necessarily title or bust. Like they want you to be good, but you don't have to win a title. Like being at Texas where he was at, that's one of those places where it's like, if you don't win a national championship this year, you failed. Nebraska hasn't been that since like the 90s. So Eichhorst, to me, like failing in that regard, and this is the big thing, like the big deal that's going to come down to it is going to be the hires that you get and whether or not you maximize it. For better or worse, until he makes another good hire, he's going to be known as a failure in that regard for Mike Riley, who was just a horrific choice at the time. Now, what I will say is if you're going to do this job and you're going to be here, the number one thing I would say is, number one, really, really look through your what you plan on doing and have a really clear path from a PR standpoint to the decisions that you make, that you understand the good and bad that comes with those decisions so that you are not tone deaf with the choices that you make. And the second thing I'd say is just keep a low profile. Like, you don't need to be out on the forefront of any of this stuff, taking on anything, unless there's something to actually take on. If there's something crazy happens with a coaching staff or a player or something like that, come out strong, you know, have a well thought out argument or whatever for whatever side you take on something, but do not get involved in things and put yourself out there. And I think this is any AD. Like, don't make yourself the face of a program. Just do a good job behind the scenes and no one will care. Like, people won't think about you at all.
So overall, are you happy with this, upset about this, or in the middle?
I am. He is very much in prove yourself mode for me. Like, I need to see him do a good job. Now, there's little things that are going to tip this off right away. Number one is going to be the PR battle. I don't want to see the screw ups that Mac had with some of the really simple things that, like, you and I could have looked at and been like, there's going to be people pissed off if we just dispose, like the brick thing. Like, was such a common sense thing where it's like, you know, before we do this, we should probably check with the people who did this and see what their thoughts are on it. Do you want the bricks? Do you know what are we going to do with it situation? Where it's like, people paid money for this. It's not something you just throw away and think that nobody will care. There's that. The other part to me is I really need to see what he can do from a fundraising standpoint. And I need to know that he's not going to be just like, well, we're going to, you know, attack our biggest donors and ask them. And if they don't give us anything, then we don't have a plan B. Because to me, it needs to be holistic in terms of how you attack the fundraising. You need to be attacking all levels of it. If somebody's willing to give you $100 towards the football program, take that money. Like, it helps you. So why are you turning it away ever? You should be looking at this from the standpoint of, yes, we really need those big donors. Those are the guys that move the needle. But we absolutely still need the smaller people. Number one, it makes them feel involved in the athletic department. And number two, every little bit helps. It stacks up. It adds up. If you end up with $100,000 from small donations, that's $100,000 you have to put towards something else.
Yeah. So I've been fairly consistent on this all week in the sense that the first day I was just like, I just want to read up on him. I didn't really know much about him at all. And ultimately, as I've said before, I was happy that we had a committee. I saw a comment here that said, I think it was Zach Bartz that said, Sean, of course, feels like we didn't need the hiring group we had to make this hire. And here's what I would say to this. If the hiring group that included guys like Chris Ballard, people from pro sports, people from the fundraising, finance world, everything, there were like 11 or whatever people, whatever it was. If that group signed off on this hire and selected this guy, even if it's a Barry guy that would have got picked, to me, that means that he can do the job that the university is looking for right now, which is a new, totally new world of athletic directors. It's not the same job that it was when he got hired at Nebraska and, you know, back in when the whole Bo Pelini thing happened. And let's be honest about this. Like, just I understand the discourse has been very bad because of the Nebraska thing. Guys, he made one bad hire. I know it's a bad hire. I know it was a big deal for Nebraska fans. But frankly, I don't give a shit about Nebraska. And he has been at Texas for 8 years as athletic director. No, as basically deputy AD and COO, learning under Chris Del Monte, a program that in that span of time won 19 national titles, won multiple directors' cups, super successful. He grew. He obviously has to grow in his career, and he would have interviewed with all these people. And if those guys said, you know what, like the first question I'm asking him is, can you go back to the Nebraska days? Tell me about that decision and what have you learned from it? And I'm sure that question was asked. All I'm saying is I trust the fact that the committee made a decision that was best for Wisconsin. I trust the fact that the university is looking out for its athletic department and knows how important it is. There's a ton of investment in what's going on. So I'm ultimately fine with it. Of course it could go wrong. Obviously it could be amazing. It could be bad, but I'm not bothered by it. And I feel like a lot of people are. And if that's your opinion, that's okay. I just am like, look, the committee made a choice. Yes. He made a bad hire at Nebraska 10 years ago. Trust me, if everyone was held to a decision they made 10 years ago, no one would ever get a job. Come on.
So question here from our good boy, KB. Fickell made one bad hire and he may be gone. There's nuance to this. And what I will say when it comes to Fickell is people can be negative on Fickell all they want. Nobody has had a rougher go of it in terms of how things have played out than Fickell has. He made a wrong hire and wanted to get off of it and wasn't allowed to. He's had quarterbacks get injured every single season. Like, realistically, if ever there was a coach that deserved to have a season just so we could see what we truly have, it's him this year, where he deserves a quarterback to be healthy so we could see what his vision of Wisconsin football actually is for once. You know, I won't say that this has been a home run at all, but I also look at it, you know, with some context on this and say, yes, a lot has gone bad. And yes, I've wanted him gone simply because I'm like, I think you need a palate cleanser here and need to get the program kind of headed back in the right direction. I still would be okay with him if he could figure out a way to prove that he's not bad. Because I do think that there's never going to be a coach that you're 100% happy with. You're just not. Like, I'm sure there were Bama fans that were pissed off about Nick Saban's use of the roster at times. And that guy is the greatest coach in, you know, college football history. So I think even with this, when it comes to Eichhorst, we have to look at it from the context of, all right, you need to do the little things well here. At some point, you're probably going to be given an opportunity to make a decision on something else. When that happens, you just need to make the best decision you can.
Yeah. All right, let's get into our pressure points discussion, which is going to start actually with athletic directors. So for each one of these, we've identified these pressure points of this team. So Eichhorst, in-game coaching, which I think is an interesting one, the defense in general, the offensive line, Colton Joseph, Grimes, and sort of offensive identity, and of course, last but not least, Luke Fickell. So let's start with Eichhorst. And for each one of these, we're going to be answering the question. I put your stuff in the comments. I'm curious what everyone thinks about this. What would relieve the pressure that's on this pressure point of the entire football season and the team and the athletic department, if you will, for the first one at least? And what would make it explode the opposite direction? So we'll start with the athletic director, because obviously it's the initial topic and the discussion here is Eichhorst. I don't think people are going to look to a lot of things right away this year, but you mentioned a couple things right away in your opening statement, which I think is a really important key. What relieves the pressure around Eichhorst right now? Because there's a lot of people, there are a lot of pissed off fans just because of the Nebraska thing, and have your opinion. People wanted an outside hire. They didn't want a Badger. They didn't want someone connected to Barry Alvarez. If that's your opinion, again, that's fine. But Justin, to you, for Sean Eichhorst and the investment of the athletic department and all that up here administration, what relieves the pressure this year and what makes it explode and goes the other direction?
Yeah, relieving the pressure, I think that you just need to make some smart decisions regarding the football program and things that you can make from a game day atmosphere, some things that can alleviate some of the frustration from fans. Look for things that you can kind of gradually kind of take bite-sized pieces and dig your feet in that way. Don't go for anything big or, you know, massive changes that are potentially going to bite you in the ass before we get to the season. Like, that is a surefire way to frustrate people, is doing things that aren't necessarily required to happen right now, but you want to make a splash and it's something that rubs people the wrong way. I don't think that would be a good idea. As far as the opposite side of this, in terms of what I think you can do to help alleviate the pressure, just listen to your people underneath you. Coaching staffs across the board for any of these programs, but especially for Luke Fickell, it's not going to be anything roster at this point. I would say look at some of the things that we've seen from the fundraising standpoint. When you see former players and stuff like that being frustrated with not being talked to, that is like your get out of jail free card with some of this fundraising stuff. Why are you not getting Frank Kaminsky involved in it? If he's willing to do it, whether it be giving funding or whether it be helping along with the process and being like, hey, you know, can you come glad hand? We're going to do a golf event or something like that. Have you come along and we're going to shoot around a golf with one of our big donors. So sit down. Frank's a smart guy. Like we've heard him talk. Like he's a guy that absolutely, I feel like you could get involved in that situation and say, hey, these are things that we want to target. And Frank would be willing to help. And those are the ways that you need to engage your donors. They want to feel like they're a part of something, and that's how you do it. They don't want to sit in a boardroom and talk to you. Like eventually, yes, you're probably going to get to that. But in order to get to that point, you kind of have to massage it. Like you have to have the good, friendly conversation that leads to the, all right, brass tacks, let's do this.
And he did that. Frank Kaminsky was here at the Badger Desert Classic. I was at that. Mm-hmm. So they have already leveraged him. And I didn't get to play golf with him, sadly, but I did see him. He was here. So for me, what relieves iCourse pressure, you mentioned earlier, good PR, and just do it's not difficult to appease fans, right? Do the smart thing, figure out, continue to have discussions and open discussions with students about the student section and what's going wrong with that. What's going right with that? What needs to change with that? More open discussion about what those issues are. Show the students, show the alumni, show the players that you care about the current state of the program. Number two for me is to connect with alumni. You must do that. Like, you know, he's got a built-in advantage. He's a Barry guy. You need to go out there. And as you mentioned, connect with alumni, bridge that to get that entire organizational culture of Wisconsin athletics has to be brought back. And number three, it's fix the operational stuff that has been plagueing this organization for a while now. There's a lot of great spots. There's a lot of spots that need help. We've got to fix those. On the other side, what'll make it explode? Making big, big changes quickly. You can't do that. Anytime you take over a job at the highest level, you need to listen, learn, make small changes, bite-sized things, and make your mark on it. Of course, he has to make his mark in the athletics department, but what he cannot do is come in there, make sweeping changes, change strategy here, change staff here, do that. That will put more pressure on him, and it'll go the opposite direction. And I don't think that's going to happen, but that's what I want to see out of him.
Well,
for sure.
You and I know, and what I'll say regarding that is he should be assessing to know what he has. Like, you came from Texas, completely different ballgame. They're probably about as streamlined as it gets at this point. Sit down and watch what's going on and how it's being done, and then you can leverage that and say, mm-hmm. these are some of the things that we did at Texas that simplified some of the issues that you're having.
Yep.
And for whatever anyone wants to say about game day atmosphere, if ever there was a school that understood game day atmosphere, it's Texas, because they do it like on a so much bigger stage than what Wisconsin does. We do some cool things here. Texas does crazy stuff for some of their big games.
Yeah, it's a good place for him to have learned. Number two is in-game coaching. This is an interesting one that I put up there because it is a pressure point. We've talked about it a lot. I'm going to go first on this one, and then I'm going to come to you. So what would relieve the pressure for in-game coaching? Since Luke Fickell has been here, there's been way too much talk on our show, on Locked On, about after the games, about fourth down decisions and in-game decisions about should we have done that. So I think what relieves that pressure is clean game management, clean clock management, and good aggressive but also logical fourth down decisions. That's really big for me. Fewer special teams mistakes. I'm sorry, I'm looking at my notes that I made earlier. Fewer special teams mistakes, because that's one thing that happens a lot. I think that's going to get cleaned up with our new head special teams coach, who has tons of experience in the NFL. And ultimately, it's about those close games. I know the answer is win more games. I want the nuanced discussion. And for me, it's more we're going to be in a lot of close games. And we're going to get to in this show, we're going to talk about our confidence ratings. And there's a whole grouping of 50-50 games, a whole grouping of them. And it's really important for us to make sure that in those games, we're making smart decisions. We're actually coming out on top in some of them. We're not going to win all of them, but it's not just about winning them. It's how we play those. And of course, the other side, what's going to make it explode is basically the inverse of what I said. Like, if I don't want a bunch of controversial fourth down calls, and I really hate poor clock management. And every time you see bad clock management, you have fans just throwing their arms up in the air saying, gosh, it's a horrible in-game coach. And that is a big thing. Clean clock management has to happen. Otherwise, there's going to be more and more pressure on his in-game coaching, because this has been a topic of discussion for multiple years now. Will this be the season where we stop talking about his in-game coaching?
You know, this is something that I think, I don't know why nothing like this has ever been done, but why don't coaches have scenario type programs or whatever that they run through? Like, that should be something that Madison develops, where they look at it and they'd be like, all right, for the coaching staff standpoint, like, this is something you should be like, you want to talk about the players executing, do it for the coaches too. Luke Fickell can sit down and have like a scenario thing on a board. I don't care if it's like a crappy version of Madden. Yeah.
They probably do that.
And just clock management and stuff like that. And sitting there and going and like, all right, we run this play. We have to get timeout instantly right away. We can't let 15 seconds to go, you know, 15, 20 seconds bleed off the clock. Got to maximize this. We need to know what we're doing. I know they do it in practice, but it's something that I think coaches should do outside of it, just as like role-playing almost. Like, hey, in this scenario, we need to just have your mind right so that your mind is drilled to the point where it's second nature. What I will say for my things regarding in-game coaching, number one, on the offensive side of the football, it's just keep it simple. Like, you need to understand what you want to do. Like, the biggest thing that could throw this season off from in-game coaching would be the offensive line not being good. Because it honestly will throw this game, the entire season, out of control if that happens. Because it's going to affect play calling, absolutely, on the offensive side if we can't run the football. And we're going to have to start taking some risks and doing some things we don't want to do if the line can't keep things, you know, working in a complementary manner. The other part of that is pretty much the same thing you said. I don't want to see these stupid play calls where we're doing a bunch of trick stuff. If we're winning in a game and we're flowing and we want to take it on a fourth down up 10 points because we're like, this is the dagger if we hit this, I'm fine with doing something that's a little bit creative. I am not okay with doing it when it's like we're just trying to figure out a way to set a drive going forward and it's fourth and one and you're like, you know what? If we're going to fullback dive this and if we don't get it, then we didn't deserve to win. Like, that's just kind of how I look at it. But that's the reality of it. Like, we can't be doing this crazy stuff to try and just make something happen. It's got to be something you earn by being able to execute at other things, because that's ultimately what makes the defense bite when they're afraid of something else. And so they overload or attack too aggressively that you end up catching them.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to Tressel and the defense. Justin, what's it's as a unit that we're pretty happy about in general, but there is still pressure on it and to basically continue the success that we sort of had at the end of last year. What makes the pressure relieved and things calm down for Mike Tressel and the adverse? What happens to if it explodes?
Well, for both Rajiv and Ryan, it's that the defensive line actually looks like a really solid defensive line, because if that's the case, this defense is going to eat. I think that's ultimately, that's our tipping point both ways. If the defensive line is a problem, it's going to affect all three levels of the defense. If the defensive line is good this year, it's going to affect all three levels of the defense. Because if they're good, everyone else can do their job and not be pressed to have to work outside of their constraints.
For me, the first thing to relieve some of the pressure is takeaways. We need more turnovers. Yeah. We need to force more turnovers. Okay, that has to happen this season, because it was an issue last year, right, where even our defense was good, we didn't really turn the ball over much, and we need to get that. Third down defense, getting off the field against big, good teams. That, I think, is if we see early on against Notre Dame and we can get off the field, get some huge stops and big key moments like we did again at the end of last year, I think that takes the pressure off this defense and stopping the run. Absolutely stopping the run. That's what takes off. If the inverse of that is all of a sudden we don't see a pass rush, right? 2-3 years ago, when we were up here complaining about Mike Tressel, the problem was there was no pass rush and the defensive line was getting swallowed up on every play. Mm-hmm. We all remember those plays, right? That to me is what makes the pressure go the opposite direction, and you're going to have instant pressure on that defense. Say, what the hell is going on here? We have to get pass rush. We have to stop the run. The takeaways for me just alleviate that pressure, but you want the pressure ratcheted up. It's don't have a pass rush and don't stop the run. You are in serious trouble. And we're going to learn very quickly against a very good Notre Dame team what that actually looks like. But for me, it's takeaways first and foremost for the defense. That will calm things down right away because it's the one stat that last year we actually did pretty poorly, even though we had a much, much improved defense.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, I think we feel like the defense just from an, as Doc said on here, improves with roster changes and maturity. I think we feel like this defense is mature to the point where we feel like it's going to be a really good unit. I'll be shocked, honestly, if it's not good. I think there's an opportunity for them to be great this year with the level of athletic talent that's there. We'll see how well everything comes together. But if it gels, they could be one of the best defenses in the Big Ten.
Maybe. Let's hope so. We're going to do a full defensive preview, by the way, next week. Nick Olsen's going to be joining us for that. Okay, next pressure point is offensive line. I'll go first on this one. For me, the biggest thing to relieve that pressure on offensive line is one, stay healthy. God, please stay healthy. But it's short. You mentioned earlier the fullback dive. It's short yardage. I want to see third and one be no problem for this offensive line. That is one of the things that defines what we do well and what we have historically done well is those short yardage situations when we are able to just win that no problem and we're not getting pushed back 3 yards and we're not getting a tons of TFLs against our O-line. That's going to be the big thing for me to kind of alleviate that early season pressure. Because if there's a position unit that almost everyone's going to be watching right away, obviously the quarterback, but it's the O-line, right? The hardcore fans like us, we know that this has been an issue last year, obviously. And what does it look like? How big of an impact does Kevin Haywood have going on the right now? And what does Wilkins look like on the left? And is Kowecki really the center that we all want him to be? And those short yardage situations for me, obviously, is the big thing. And of course, just looking physical and looking dominant again. Obviously, we're playing Western Illinois and Eastern Michigan. The Notre Dame game, we're not going to look physically dominant. But can we hold our own? And can we have those short yardage situations? Conversely, pretty much what we saw last year, which was getting blown up on the left side by, you know, obviously what happened with Heinzen and getting our quarterback injured in game one. Like, that is really the thing that's gonna make the – everything's going to explode. Because last year we lost one guy in Haywood, and the entire line just sort of crumbled a bit, right? Well, if that happens again, are we prepared for that? I don't know. We'll see. But a lot of those things can get that pressure can go away very early if we look physical and we start winning those short yardage situations.
Yeah, I think the first thing for me with that is when it comes to Notre Dame, we're not going to manhandle them by any means. But what they can do is hold their own against a really good defensive front. And if they can do that, that bodes really well for the season. As far as being able to relieve pressure, to me, number one, I actually feel pretty good about the starting group. It's building competent depth. If you have guys that can come out of the fall here where you feel like your tackle spots are solid, you know, with backups that if something happens, you have a guy that can come in for a series or two, or, you know, in the unfortunate situation, come in for multiple games, that is a huge deal for this team. We have not had that in multiple years now. It's a big, big problem. Beyond that, yeah, it's just competency in terms of with the scheme and everything else, being able to execute at a, it doesn't necessarily even have to be high level. It's got to be competency again. We've got to show that we can run the football to at least the level where we feel like the running game is something that we can lean on at times. There's going to be games where it's going to struggle, but having games where it's like, all right, getting back to the 150, 160 yards a game at a minimum would be a big deal for this team. If they can get into the 180 range, then I think we're in a really good spot for the season. And I think there's going to be some of that. I think those two games will tell us a ton after Notre Dame. Because if we can just run the ball down those two teams' throat, I want to see us throw the ball a little bit too. But if we can physically dominate them, that'll tell us all we need to know going into the Big Ten, whether or not we should be able to function the way we want to.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. Okay, next up, you go first on this one. This is Colton Joseph, the next pressure point for us. So imagine we're one game into the year, two games into the year, three games into the year. There's a ton of pressure on Colton Joseph. So what do you need to see to have that pressure be relieved? And what are you seeing if things are just going totally sour for Colton Joseph?
Yeah, the one thing I will see is take what's there. Don't take the simple shots. Take the easy 5 yards here and there. Do the little things that are going to keep you alive for another day. The thing I don't want to see pretty clearly here is, number one, don't go running around with your head like a chicken with your head chopped off. And number two, don't start taking shots that aren't there simply because you think that you're capable of it. Because that is how you put yourself into a bad situation. And that's how you basically, it's a selfish play. Like when you start taking shots on throws that aren't there or are really difficult to handle throws when other things are open, simply because you want to prove that you can, those are ego throws. And ultimately you're hurting the entire offense, not just yourself, the entire offense, if you start taking risks that aren't necessary.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. When you taking big risks is what's going to cause the pressure on him to explode. For me, it's two things, and they're simple. One, protect the ball. Protect the ball. And number two, have a high percentage completion on the easy throws. Be able to make the easy throws. It is one of those small question marks we've talked about before. Completion percentage. Obviously, it was very skewed by the number of his A dot was insane. The average depth of target, we know that. But can he make those easy throws? Can he find those quick mesh crossing routes or whatever the case out of the backfield? Can he make the crisp, clean throws to move the chains? Can he do that well? And can he protect the ball? Because you're exactly right. If he tries to play hero ball, he is going to get found out because this conference does not reward that, right? You've got to be very disciplined, very, you know, like you've got to make your reads, you've got to make your throws. And you have to know that the opposing teams on our schedule, I don't care how weak the schedule really is, it doesn't matter. There's defensive backs that we're going to face. I mean, first of all, the first team we play has probably the best secondary in America, and it's not close. So, it's not going to be easy. Make the short throws accurately and protect the ball. Those are the two things I want to see right away, and I'm looking for immediately, which will calm that pressure down for Colton Joseph. Okay, Justin, this one's you. You got to start with this one. Jeff Grimes, you kind of touched on it a little bit earlier. Tons of pressure on Jeff Grimes to clean this up, to show us what he actually has. You were an apologist of his when he came on. Obviously, did not have a very good year. 12 points per game. That's a disaster class of all kinds. Obviously, we had four quarterbacks. What do you want to see out of Jeff Grimes to calm down the pressure and prove that we're going to feel good about this offense this year?
Yeah, honestly, it goes hand in hand with the offensive line. Just help yourself. If the running game is working, lean on it as your crutch. I'm okay with that. Like, make it a big play action season. That helps both you and Colton Joseph. If you have an opportunity here where you don't have to get overly aggressive with the passing game, Wisconsin needs to walk before it can run. Like, if the season you end up growing and you become more pass happy as the season goes on, that's fine. Get your legs under you to start the season and be competent and build to something that is beyond that. We don't need to be taking a ton of shots and stuff like that. Just get the running game rolling because you are going to need it throughout the Big Ten season. And if that running game is solid, it is going to make the season infinitely simpler for Colton Joseph at quarterback.
So for me, I want to see some creativity with Colton Joseph. I'm very interested to see what kind of offense he really has drawn up this year. And we know what we thought we were going to see last year. And I think a lot of people expect that again this year. But
yeah,
he's got such a dynamic quarterback athletically that I'm very curious to see what he does with him and how he's using his legs and how he's using, you know, the quarterback run scheme and what that looks like. And then, of course, can he scheme guys open the way that we expected last year? We don't know about a wide receiver room. We don't know how good it's going to be. There's question marks. Again, we're playing the top defensive back group in America in game one, which you can learn all about, by the way, in the Know Your Foe series on Wednesday. Had a great interview with Locked On Irish about that. And so I'm very curious to see what that looks like. And it's just sticking with a good identity. Like, just have an identity and go with it. We've got to make sure we can run the ball. Keep it simple. You said that to the top of the show. I think that was exactly right. And we can't get too creative, but we also have to make sure that we're using Colton Joseph's attributes properly, which means, yeah, he's going to have to run the ball because he's pretty dynamic running the ball. Mm-hmm. If we have another, you know, if we shit the bed offensively and we're scoring 12, 13 points a game, like, it's just people are going to be calling for his firing middle of the season. And he has a lot to prove, probably the most of anyone on the season this year. I think Jeff Grimes is a lot of focus on what that offense looks like because Tressel figured it out. He got it. Now can Grimes do it?
Yeah. I don't think he'll hear it week one, but if it's not there in those next two games, they have to score 40 plus. And they should score 40 plus.
We've said that a lot, though.
I know, but I'm saying, I'm not saying like this from the standpoint of I'm expecting it. I'm saying you need to prove that you're capable of it because there's no reason those teams should be holding you down. There is zero reason why either of those teams should be able to control Colton Joseph at quarterback and your running game. Like one of those two things should break loose, which should lead to you just bludgeoning them. Because if they're going to sell out for the run, Colton Joseph should run for 150 yards. Because he's going to get around the corner and get room to run if they sell out for the run game.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay, last one up, pressure point, of course. Last but certainly not least, Luke Fickell. Probably the most pressure of anyone is the ultimate hot seat, especially with the new athletic director. For me, two things on each side. So what relieves that pressure for me? It's better performance in rivalry games. That's got to be number one. Like I can't have us look like crap against Iowa and Minnesota. I just can't. That 37-0 loss to Iowa might be the most painful thing I've ever had to experience. And it was cold and I was annoyed and we were just, it was the worst thing ever. Now the hanging out with all the guys ahead of time was great. The actual game and the post game up in the press box, disaster. Okay. Disaster. So I got to have that. And obviously bowl eligibility, we talk about that kind of stuff, but ultimately it's proof of concept. Like we were told we were going to invest in the program. We were told that everything was going to turn around. Transfer portal class looks pretty good. All right, now it's the ultimate prove it now. But for me, we've got to get better in those key rivalry games. The opposite side of that is, again, we hear fire Fickell. We see blowouts. Quitting on the team. If our players, like they did against Iowa, if it just looks like they're uninterested and they're not going to play and everything that we've been working up towards and gearing up for and getting all excited about all summer is an improved team, the best roster we've seen in a while, if that falls flat and we are in a game with Western Illinois or in a game with Eastern Michigan, that's where the wheels will come completely off and we're right back where we were in the middle of last season.
Yeah, and we've talked about this with those two games and said that those are, like, you are kind of in prove-it mode. Those are two games where you should go out there and you should go for blood and be aggressive. And don't just sit there and be like, oh, we scored 35, time to just sit on the ball and you know, grind this out now. Continue to run your offense. Number one, you have a ton of new players that they need as many reps as possible for later in the season. And number two, you need to prove that this is real. I don't want to see a couple of big plays in a game like that and then the rest of the time look disjointed and we end up winning 28-13 or something like that and look at that and be like, this is the same thing I've been watching for the last 3 years. It can't be that way. Like, you've got to prove that you're better and that you're going to be kind of a dark horse in the Big Ten. I don't mean that as in a, you're going to challenge for the conference, but I want you to be that team that nobody wants to deal with because you're the one that kind of can end somebody else's season.
Yeah. I would love that. You're so right. I would love to be the team that people are like, damn, Wisconsin's really good this year. Damn. They're way better than we thought they were.
Yeah. I'm taking out USC. I would love that to see USC be undefeated coming into that game. And then we end up tripping them up and have them have to potentially miss out on the Big Ten title game because we tripped them up. That would be amazing.
It would be great. It would be great. Over 350 of you watching us live. Thanks for joining us again. Here's our bit of a content calendar for you. Not exactly in order of shows we have coming up. Know Your Foe series kicks off on July 8th. It's already done. That show's ready to go out. Justin and I have to record a little bit first and then we'll drop that. I've got tons and tons of content coming up. So if you're watching us on Twitter, by the way, go to the YouTube link, subscribe to us on YouTube, watch us on YouTube or Twitter, of course. There's all kinds of content that we've got coming up. And we're going to move to the second half of our show, which is schedule confidence ratings. We've done this before. We did this earlier after the spring. And we're going to do it now. And then, of course, we're doing our prediction show the weekend before the season opener because we're going to be at the season opener in Green Bay. Hopefully, you're going to be there, too. We'd love to see many of you. So we're going to look through the whole schedule, percentage out of 100 Justin, about how confident are we in winning this ball game. So that's what we're going to do. I've got the schedule I'm going to pull up here, and we'll kind of go. But I want to do this in groups, okay? Because I think when you look at the schedule, there are the winnable, like we have to win these games. And I have four in that category. And that's Western Illinois, Eastern Michigan, Rutgers because it's at home, and then at Purdue because it's Purdue. And we should beat them every year because we're on like, what, 19 in a row, I think, of beating Purdue. So we're going to start there. Then we got the next group of, they're the hardest ones we have, and they're upset opportunities just because, you know, and that's Notre Dame, USC, and at Penn State.
I have a couple of curveballs to throw in on these two.
Okay. And then I've got group three, which is the 50-50 games, the games that will likely define our season: Michigan State, at UCLA, at Iowa, at Maryland, Minnesota. It's like we might win all the first games. We might lose all the other ones, the upset opportunities, but it's going to be those five in the middle that are really going to define. Are we a 4-8 team? Are we a 7-5? Are we an 8-3? So put your stuff in the comments. I want percentages out of 100. Even if you listen to the show later, very, very, very interested to hear what you have to say, like what your percentages are. So put that stuff in the comments. Let's start, Justin, with the must wins. We're going to just kind of Western Illinois, Eastern Michigan. Can we agree that those are like 98%? I mean, there's really nothing there.
Yeah, I think that is, 98% somewhere in that ballpark. So I'll throw you a curveball on this. Odds of hitting over 40 points in both games. What's your confidence in that?
That's a good question, man. I don't really have a lot of confidence just because I think that our team, like, obviously we're going to be better offensively, but I don't know that we're going to be that, like, we're going to be 40 points in two back-to-back games. I could see 40 in one of them. I could see a 35-10 game and a 43-13 or something. I just don't know that we're ready to have that kind of offensive firepower. Boy, I would love to see it, and we're going to need it if we want our numbers to be a lot better. But 40 in both games is a stretch. I'm not confident in that.
Okay. Well, what's your percentage?
I would say probably 40% that we can get over 40 points in both of those games.
I'm going to say 65.
Mm. Okay, so you like that.
I think the offense is going to be much more competent and coherent this year than what we saw. And I think it's going to start with the offensive line. I do think we'll be able to – it may not be against everybody this season that we can run the ball well, but I do think against those two teams, we're going to run the football well.
Okay, let's go to Rutgers at home. Confidence there
at home, I'd say 80.
Yeah, I'm at a 75 just because I just don't like they're not horrible. They're getting better. They lost some players, but they're all right. But again, like if we're ultimately, you can't lose to Rutgers at home. You just can't. Okay. You just can't. That's even if that's last year's team playing at Rutgers at home in November, like you got to win that game. Now that game is literally in early November. By that time, our team should be ready to go. So I'm saying 75% there.
So at Purdue, I want to throw something in on that just out of discussion. They did lose their quarterback, and we had coming into like the season before last year where everyone was talking about how they expected us to lose that game. And we just blitz them in that game too. So my thoughts on this is not going to be a better representation than what we saw against that team that had a well-seasoned quarterback. I think Wisconsin should win this one fairly convincingly.
Yeah, you're right. They're going to be a little more improved just because they have a new coaching staff. But for me, it's still an 80% that we win at Purdue. I'm actually more confident beating at Purdue just because we always beat Purdue. And I think we're more physical than them. I think our defense is the real reason, because I'm so confident that our defense is going to be better. Purdue's not going to be able to score many points on us. 80% that we beat Purdue. That rounds out my easy four, if you will.
I think I'm 85, and I think a lot of it has to do with, I think, roster. I think our roster is significantly better. I think they got gutted, the players that were good players on that team. So maybe in a couple of years, they'll be a pretty solid Big Ten team again. I don't expect it to be this year. I think this is where you bottom out, where your roster is kind of devoid of talent. And it's kind of like, we need to prove that we're going to at least play hard kind of year and move forward from there.
All right. So those are the four that we feel most comfortable in. Those are the must wins. I really do think those are must wins. Western Illinois, Eastern Michigan, Rutgers, and at Purdue. You got to win those games. Yeah. Those are four. You got a notch in the W column. Now let's go to the other end of the spectrum and talk about the three games that are our longest odds to actually win, which are Notre Dame, of course, at Lambeau Field, USC at home, and at Penn State. Those are officially our longest odd games. Notre Dame, Justin, first game of the season. We've both kind of hinted at predicting a win. I just did an interview with the Locked On Irish guys. Boy, oh boy, are they pumped about their team, and they are freaking loaded at defensive back, all over the map, defensive line. They're going to be so good. What's your confidence level in that game? I'll tell you what, mine's changed.
I would say 20% for me.
20%. I thought it was going to be higher for you. I expected a higher number for you.
That doesn't mean I don't think we'll be competitive in the game. That means that I think that the actual odds of an expectation of it, of us winning that game, are 20%.
Yeah. Yeah. So for me, yeah, it's about the same, really, 15 to 20%. I do believe in the Lambeau Field home field advantage. I know some people don't. I think it's going to be great. I think we definitely can win that game. We have no idea what to expect truly from Colton Joseph. So we're going to learn a lot there. Mm-hmm. Notre Dame has a really bad record in September, right? Marcus Freeman has never gotten through September undefeated since he's been there. This is his fifth season. So they're always losing these early season games. Maybe that can be this, but dude, CJ Carr and that roster. Oh my God. That roster is absolutely stacked. And I just, the more I learned about Notre Dame doing the Know Your Foe film for this week, God, I'm like, man, I just don't know. I'm still hoping for a win. I think we can maybe find a way, but I'm at 15-20%.
They did lose some pretty big playmakers. So
they did.
Interesting to see how they backfill that.
They did. So and again, it's check that show out. It's going to be dropping on Wednesday. But they ultimately lost their both running backs. But they didn't bring a lot in the portal. But their high school recruiting is so good, and they've got guys ready to go next man up. The key positions like defensive line and some defensive backs, they lost some guys. They brought people in. They brought great transfers and 5-star transfers in. So. Yeah, man, it's tough. Okay, USC at home. This is an interesting one. This is also in that group of these are our upset opportunities, very unlikely to win. USC, but it's a home game, Justin, and it's near the end of October. It's not Halloween, but it's like right before that. What do you think about USC?
I would probably put that game at 40% because it's here. And we've seen USC has struggled when they come east. They really have had some games that they should not have lost or should not have been competitive since they've joined. And that's kind of why I don't think I'd be that high if it was being played in LA. I'd probably be down at like 25. But the fact that they're coming here, I think it's a much closer game and a much better chance of us potentially pulling the upset in that.
So I'm actually at 52% on this. Ooh. I'm over 50% on this game. Because a lot of what you said, USC is still trying to figure out our conference, and I think they're still going to get blown up in games where they just don't belong. And it is in October. It is likely going to be cold. I hope it's freaking freezing in October, because USC does not like to play in that weather. They lost key weapons like Mekhi Lemon. I think their coach is figuring it out. I think they're going to be really good. They're one of the better teams in the country. I get that. But I have a feeling this is going to be one of those big, big upsets that we have this year. I don't, you know, in the end, I'm probably not going to beat Notre Dame. I'm probably not going to beat even Penn State, which we're going to talk about in a minute. But USC at home, I do think this is going to be a W for us. So I'm saying 52%.
Okay. I mean, that would be the win that makes the season if that happens. Because yeah. I do think that USC is at a minimum dark horse playoff team.
Yes, yeah, for sure. For sure. Okay, at Penn State, new coach, Matt Campbell, moved from Iowa State, took a ton of his players over there. James Franklin is gone. That's the guy who doesn't win big games. Matt Campbell, slightly better record when it comes to big games. Big question marks, ultimately, because we don't really know what team to expect there. Winning at Happy Valley is very difficult. We don't do it very well. Hardly any team does it well. It's a very difficult place to play. I'm going to say, Justin, 35% here. I think it's a question mark. Their roster, we could have a better roster than them. Probably not, but it's possible. Colton Joseph could be really rounding into form after having two easy games for a couple weeks. And maybe he has a good game. Our defense could play really well. But honestly, it's that environment. If this game was in Madison, I'd be picking a win. I just, dude, Penn State on the road is a very, very tough place to play.
So I think it's interesting saying that he has had a better record against good teams, because I think the Big 12, it's so hard to look at that and say, what is a big game in the Big 12 compared to what's here? Like, okay, big games fair. In the Big 12 are effectively like playing Iowa here. Like, that's a game that it's a big game for us because it's a rivalry. But if we were playing, if it wasn't a rivalry game against Iowa, we wouldn't look at that as a big game. We would look at that as like, we're playing a solid team this week. So to me, I think he's got a lot to prove this year, coming up, because number one, I think we need to find out how much talent was bled from that roster when he came in, because like I said, their blue chip ratio dropped from like 40 something down to like 20 something, which Wisconsin's actually got the higher blue chip ratio now. He does have some really high end talent at important positions like quarterback, where Rocco Becht is a senior now and is going to be playing. I think for me, percentage wise, I'm at 45%. And I think that Wisconsin has a legitimate chance of winning this game. I don't buy that they're going to out-talent us. And I think that's the biggest thing, is that game's going to be a slugfest, and it's going to be whoever makes more. You can make the argument that Joseph is the most dynamic offensive player in that game. Like, it will depend on what he can do as a passing game, but I think that he offers a lot more with his legs than what Beck does.
Yeah, I hear you on that. I think the difference for me is Happy Valley. I just feel like that environment.
And that's fair. Like, that's really gonna be hard. That's going to be the first game that we can look at and say, how does this team react to this? Because it's not going to be Lambeau. And we're not going to see it in the other two games. So it'll be
It's our first true road game.
Yeah.
It's our first true road game, and it's at Penn State. That's not an easy thing to do. Now, we've been close there. The pain that we felt at that stadium is just unbearable. Okay, last set. So now group three, 50-50 game. This is pretty much everything else. This is Michigan State at UCLA, at Iowa, at Maryland, home, of course, to the stupid Minnesota Golden Gophers. Those are the games that will define this season. Even if we win those first four and we lose those second three, this will be the group that if we win three or four of these games, we end up with a 8 or 9 win record, right? 7 or 8 win record. This will define that, anywhere between 5 wins, 9 wins, right? It's these 5 games. We'll start with Michigan State. It is a home game. What's your percentage for Michigan State?
65%.
Say that again?
65. Yeah, I expect us to win this game. I think our roster is just better. I do respect their coach a great deal in terms of getting the most out of that team. I just don't know that the talent's there for them to do a whole lot this year. And I will say this, it'll be very interesting to see how he plays against us without Hankowitz, who is effectively what carried that team when he was at Northwestern. He's not the same coach without him as his defensive coordinator, and that's a big deal.
So I'm higher on this. I'm actually more like 75%. Sure. I think Michigan State is a game that if you don't win.
Yeah, it's borderline in that other category.
Yeah, if you don't win this game, you look at you're going into a bye week, and the questions, the shows are going to be awful. If we lose that game, we have 2 weeks of sitting there waiting to go to the West Coast.
I do expect us to win this, by the way.
I do. I just feel like, yeah, for me, it's 75%. I'm feeling good about this game. I think we should win this game for sure. They are rebuilding. It's definitely not the Michigan State team that has had success in recent years. At UCLA, 2 weeks later, after a bye week, UCLA is a team that loves what their kind of talent they brought in. That's a roster that feels it's gotten way better. Nico Iamaleava, who I really don't believe in. People still think he's really good. UCLA for me, so this is actually for me, this is like 55%. I have this in, I'm comfortable going to the Rose Bowl and getting a victory against UCLA. They are an improved team. They're not as improved as we are, in my opinion. And they've got a very athletic and good quarterback. I just think our linebackers, Posa, Catalano, guys like Cheeks, I don't think he's going to get very far with those guys. I'm pretty confident in this game. Like, I'm not saying it's going to be a high number for me because it is still a road game, but it's over that 50% mark. I do think we win.
I'm at 65% in this one. I actually think that this is a game that we win. And the reason why, you said part of it, But I also want to see this coaching staff come into the Big Ten and prove that they can win. The last time we saw them play against a real team, they got absolutely annihilated by Oregon, a team that we actually had a really good showing against. And I realize it's a playoff game and Oregon came in looking to prove a point, but that game was not competitive at all. And that is kind of where one of these things is, how do you fit in the Big Ten and can you, does what you want to do work here? Because we've seen coaches come in, want to try a system that has worked in other conferences and they get to the Big Ten and they get punched in the mouth and it deflates them. And that's what I need to see from JMU. Like, I'm not totally sold that this is going to work simply because they beat up one of the Power Five conferences.
Yeah. Okay. At Iowa, probably the biggest game of the season. I mean, I think as far as what happened last year we were focused on what happened the year before that. And then we got blown out again by Iowa, this time at home in a complete disaster. We're going to Kinnick Stadium. Justin, for me, this is 40% at best. I don't love this game. I think when you look at this group of 50-50 games, this is we're going to be on the wrong side of this. There's no chance. I'm telling you right now, there's no chance I'm picking us to go to Kinnick and win. I just can't see it.
I have a set 40 only because it's at Kinnick. I think this is a game. There's a lot of question marks with Iowa this year. A lot is upheaval of experienced players being gone on defense. They do have a couple of returning guys on offense. We'll find out what's going on with the quarterback room. They have not been impressive in that regard in a while. If we can stop the run against them and not turn the ball over on offense, I feel pretty good about our opportunity. To me, this is a game that if you have Colton Joseph play well, I think that I could really see us win this one. And that's because I think that I don't think this is going to be an overly daunting defense from them. I think it's going to be one of their weaker ones in more recent history. And I don't necessarily buy that the offense is going to be anything to write home about. Like, the biggest thing in this game is we cannot turn the ball over and give them opportunities. We lost that game last year, and I'm not saying we would have won it, but the reason that turned into a blowout was three completely moronic moves by a fourth-string quarterback in a game that basically threw us out of the game before the first quarter was over. So if you can get Joseph to make smart decisions in this game and just take what's there, I think we can be very competitive in this game, if not win it.
Yeah, possible. I'm sort of scarred now with 42-10 and 37-0.
That's fair.
I just don't know how you do it.
Well, number one, you have your starting quarterback for the game. That's a starting point.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, let's move on to Maryland. At Maryland, Justin, this is a road game against Malik Washington. That's that quarterback. Didn't do that well against him last year.
I think the secondary is going to be vastly improved, and I just don't think they have a prayer running the football against us. So I do think that this is a game that we win and kind of give them a throat punch to get back at them for last year. So I'm going to say that this one I have is at 70%. This is a game that we want to prove ourselves in, I feel like, and kind of get them back for last year.
Yeah, definitely a revenge game. It's late in the year. By this time, we're gonna know really what we are. Like, if we're the 4-win team or a 5-win team at this point, or are we already at 6, knocking on the door of 8 if we get Maryland and Minnesota? Like, we'll know a lot about this team, obviously, going into this game. But what scares me is Malik Washington.
Let's set for the bye week. Let's reevaluate our percentages at that point.
Oh, we will. We're definitely.
I feel like that is a perfect time to know what we kind of are and can say what we feel about for this stretch run heading into it.
Yeah. No, we definitely will. Like, bye week will exactly do that. We'll look at the rest of the season. But yeah, I'm sort of like in the 60s, I think, maybe. Okay. But last up, of course, we'll still do this one now because it's freaking Minnesota. If there's one thing Luke Fickell has to do this year, please don't lose to that tool PJ Fleck. I can't handle that. It's a home game. I mean, come on, man. Like, we this team has just done enough damage to us that I can't live with it anymore. Like, I need that axe back. I need it to be done. I need this thing to be finished. And for us to just be able to be calm and know that we have that axe in the rightful spot. I'm confident that we're actually going to get this. I really do. I think I'm about 65% on the Minnesota game.
I'm actually higher. If we come into this game and we're healthy, I'm at 75%. I think they will go. They are going to come out aggressive in this one and go to kick their ass. We have not been healthy at quarterback in the longest time playing these games. And I feel like last year, if we're starting anyone that's competent at quarterback, that game, we easily win it.
Yeah.
Like we had some of the dumbest interceptions possible at quarterback, like just throws that are like, what the hell are you doing? Yeah. And we were still competitive in that game. And that was with a team that was really struggling. And I think that we're going to be better on the trenches this year, mostly on the offensive side. And I think that quarterback is just going to be, no matter what, I feel better about whoever is going to be out there. If it's any of the top three guys, they're just going to be much better quarterbacks.
Yeah, we're not going to be down to our fourth string and not know what the hell's going on and the 12 points a game nonsense. But you're right. Like, our defense played better, and hopefully by that time.
And we the weather was like, how much better is that game for the defense if the weather isn't trash?
Yeah,
for where sure. They can pin their ears and play.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. All right, we'll leave it there. Defensive preview is up next week. Know Your Foe with Notre Dame drops on Wednesday. That'll start an 8-week Know Your Foe program. And if you're still watching this, thank you so much for being one of the ones that go watch to the end. Hit that like button. It's super, super helpful to us on YouTube. So do that. Like it on Twitter. Go subscribe to us if you're not subscribed to the show, so you can see all of our great upcoming content coming up to preview this season. Justin, final thoughts before we close the show today.
Yeah, it's good to be getting a little bit closer to the season. I am beyond ready for things to start, or at least fall camp, so we start getting some updates on what's going on. I think we all kind of want to know or have a better feeling about what we can expect this season. And it stinks that in week one, we're probably not going to know still, because it's on there. I was going to say, I don't think I brought it up. What is your percentage? Because we didn't talk. Yeah. What do you think about us covering? What is your percentage that we cover?
So 6.5 is our line. That's what you're talking about?
Against Notre Dame?
Covering
in that game. It's 20.5 or whatever at this point.
20.5. I do think we cover that game. I do think we cover that because, like Notre Dame struggles a little bit. I right now, I'm going to say they're going to beat us. I just do. After I learn more about this team, they're so good. But, yeah, I think it's going to be closer than people think, because our defense is going to keep us in a little bit. That's where I'm at with it. I don't know how much we're going to score, though, because those defensive backs – yikes. But maybe we can run the ball.
What's the number, man?
I think we lose by 13.
No. Percentage.
Oh, so gosh.
70%? 80%?
That we cover.
To cover.
70% that we cover.
Okay. That's where I was at, too.
Yeah.
I'm like, I feel comfortably that we're going to. 20, that's a huge number. That's almost like you're playing like a directional, like, FCS school number.
I mean, our record last year doesn't really reflect anything better.
There are some things that you can look at and say, all right, we can, it's easy to expect this to be better. Like, we're not going to have our quarterback's not going to be injured going into game. Well,
I mean, let's not go there, Justin. It's a big number. It is a big number, but also, like, when a lot of people are going to bet Wisconsin because of that, and then sometimes you go the other way and it could happen, but who knows? We'll leave it there.
I do think you may be a little high on their secondary to a point. Like, I don't, this isn't like the Legion of Boom back there. I'd still expect us to be, the big plays aren't going to be there. I do expect us to at least have a functional offensive passing game.
Okay.
It's not going to be big numbers. It might be 200 yards passing, but if we can get to that, I think that gives you an opportunity.
We're 63 days away from that exact thing happening, so we will find out soon enough. Yes, hit the like button, hit the subscribe button. Thanks for all the support of the show. Thanks for joining us, and as always, on Wisconsin.
On Wisconsin.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoy the show, subscribe to our YouTube channel at The Bucky Report or The Bucky Report Podcast from wherever you get your content. Until next time, on Wisconsin.